Senate Bill 1129 and Senate Bill 1130. So when people who identify themselves find out, hopefully we can have a hearing on both measures. I would point out, however, as I spoke to the Senator from Albany, if those people have written testimony, we would be prepared to accept that written testimony in lieu of you actually speaking. Cindy, would you like to return to the witness stand and do your presentation, please?
Yes.
Representative, would you like to come forward too and join Senator E? And Senator Nelson, would you like to come forward and join? Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 1129 and 1130. For the record, State Senator Mei Yi, representing Senate District 19, which is comprised of portions of Lane and Benton counties. Senate Bill 1129 and 1130 would direct the Economic Development Department to contract with a consultant beginning in January of year 2000 to increase trade opportunities for Oregon businesses and open an Oregon trade office in Shanghai, China by July of 2001. In 1998, Oregon's exports to international markets totaled $9.8 billion. Exports account for one in every seven jobs in the state. For many Oregon companies, the ability to successfully access new markets will be critical to their growth and viability. China, with its population of 1.3 billion, is now the world's third largest economy, and its rapidly growing middle class will become the largest consumer market early in the 21st century. The China market offers a significant long-term market potential for Oregon exports. In addition to its tremendous growth potential, China's economy has been one of the most stable economies in Asia and in the world. Most of the information I'll give you today was drawn from a China market study just published in April 1999 by the Rubicon International Consulting Firm in Portland, commissioned by the Economic Development Department in January of 1999, and committee members all have a copy. China's ambitious development plans create opportunity in almost every segment of Oregon industry, and its purchase of capital goods is forecasted as $700 billion in the next decade. Opportunities exist in almost every sector, but Oregon companies are uniquely positioned to capitalize on three priority growth areas: high technology, environmental protection, and agricultural and forest products. The high technology industry has become one of the fastest growing import sectors in China. In 1998, high technology exports accounted for 54% of Oregon's total exports. However, only 1.1% of those high technology exports went to China. China's rapid industrialization over the last 50 years has created serious environmental problems, including significant air and water pollution. In 1997, China spent roughly $7.2 billion on environmental cleanup under its ninth five-year plan, and it plans to boost environmental spending to an annual level of more than $15 billion a year. Oregon has competitive strength in all segments of the environmental services industry, especially wastewater management and consulting services for pollution control and planning. there are various loans and grants available under the World Bank program. Whenever water and air pollution is abated in China, it eventually helps the world's economy, world's environment. For example, sandstorms in northern China, due to lack of erosion control, send particles that can now be detected in the United States in Texas. Pulp paper and wood products consumption has risen significantly with China's rapid economic growth over the last 15 years. Oregon has a strong position in the pulp and paper sector and in advanced forest management technologies, where demand in China will be significant. By the year 2000, China's market for wood pulp would exceed 25 million tons, of which 3 million tons would be imported. It is anticipated that Oregon's agricultural products in wheat, grass seeds, hazelnuts, etc. are going to have real increase in demand. The Oregon Grass Seed Council predicts that an increase in sales from 5 million pounds in 1998 to 100 million pounds in 10 years because of China's tremendous needs in the development of parks, golf courses, pastures, and erosion control along its riverbanks. Additionally, a large quantity of chicken feet has been exported to China. Chicken feet is a delicacy in China, but is just wasted here. A full-time consultant in China will help us explore unique opportunities. Despite the significant Chinese market potential, small and medium-sized firms report barriers to market entry. These barriers include lack of technical knowledge and lack of expenses of maintaining overseas presence. Most large Oregon corporations with offices in China have overseas representatives. An Oregon trade office will represent a unified approach to help Oregon's small and medium-sized businesses capitalize on this excellent opportunity in China. 10 states currently have trade offices in China. They report two primary advantages. First, success in the China market requires a long-term commitment and the careful building of relationships. The trade office will serve to develop a network of contacts and to promote and market Oregon businesses. Second, a trade office would provide technical expertise in the complex import policies of China, a myriad of licenses, inspection requirements, and local customs procedures make China a difficult market for all but the most experienced exporter. Washington has a trade office in Shanghai, and California employs a full-time consultant in China. In 1997, California and Washington led the nation in exports to China with a combined total of over $4 billion. Oregon's exports to China total only 1.5% of our total exports, and we rank 25th in the country in annual growth of exports to China, in spite of our geographic advantage. Some very brief information about funding. Senate Bill 1130 allocates $230,000 of existing resources for the opening of the trade office in China by July 2001. This includes hiring a full-time consultant in China beginning January 1, 2000 to begin the research and contacts necessary to increase trade opportunities for Oregon businesses. The full-time consultant will be funded at $70,000 per year. This also includes a support staff at the Portland International Trade Office funded at $33,000 per year and startup expenses of an Oregon Trade Office at $75,000. China is working to gain acceptance in the World Trade Organization, perhaps as early as this fall. They have lowered their restrictions on Northwest wheat import as an example. Oregon has great potential, but must act now. Not only is Oregon uniquely positioned because of our many strengths in the area that China wants to develop, but we are also positioned geographically close to China. In fact, AT&T just announced in April its $1.1 billion plan to construct the first China-U.S. fiber optic cable link. The cable's first U.S. connection point will be Bandon, Oregon. Motorola, a leader in cellular phones, pagers, and two-way radio, has committed to more than $1.5 billion in China, and so has General Motors, investing a similar amount in its manufacturing plant in Shanghai, China. I'm introducing an amendment to merge part of Senate Bill 1130 into Senate Bill 1129. The amendment moves Section 3 from Senate Bill 1130, which is the allocation of $230,000 into Senate Bill 1129, the substantive bill. It also includes additional amendments, which are to add wheat and hazelnuts to products included in the preamble, and it deletes the reference to biotechnology and medical products in the preamble because they're not high-priority products for export to China. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I urge your support of this important first step. As Oregon's economy slows, we need to intensify our efforts in increasing our international trade market. It would be advantageous for Oregon's economy, for China's environment, and the world's environment. It will bring benefits to citizens of both countries for many generations to come. I urge your support of amended A and Growth Senate Bill 1129. I have 9 letters of support from people who cannot come today and will be happy to make them available to committee members. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have at work session time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? No, thank you, Senator. Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Elaine Hobson, and I'm a state representative from District 2. And I would like to say ni hao to all of our Chinese friends in the room. I'm here to speak more from the heart rather than from the statistics. I was fascinated by Senator Yi's information. Every time I hear information about China, I'm amazed and impressed that the growth is there. My background is that I have visited China several times. I have a son who lived there a total of almost 2 years. In fact, we were reminiscing as a family at the age of 18. He was in China exactly 10 years ago and was in Tiananmen Square. So we have quite a variety of experiences associated with China. Of all the countries I've ever visited, China is the one that did more for my heart and my feeling of community in the world. We have a number of friends in China whom I visited over there. We brought a family over who... ironically, they came over and we tease them now. I tease them about being the suburban family with 2 cars, and I went back to Juneau a while back and they now have 3 cars and there's only 3 of them in the family, but we all know how that goes. The Chinese are wonderful people and we can learn a lot from them, and one of the things that I think, again, from the heart is very important is to learn about families and children. The Chinese have a lot that we could learn about that. But I think there are 2 aspects to this whole issue, and they're both practical. And one deals with the practicality of the business, and the other deals with the practicality of the humaneness and the humanness of those people. There's no doubt, and you'll hear a lot of testimony about the emerging business aspects in China. And if we don't respond to those needs, someone else will. And I think as Oregonians, we owe it to ourselves and all of the people in the state to provide a method for our state to play an active role in this whole process. So from the business aspect, it makes sense. Also, from the human aspect, it also makes sense. We don't always agree with everything that the Chinese do, but we do know that in the long run, we are either going to be their friends or we are going to be their enemies. And we have an opportunity to work toward that choice to the way that we all want, and that is to be their friends in the world and in the future. And it benefits us in every way. So I guess in closing, I would say to you, what do we have to lose by moving forward aggressively in this area? What do we have to gain? Everything. And I thank you for your time. I'd be glad to answer questions, but as you noted, mine comes from the heart more than statistics.
All right, thank you very much, Senator. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is David Nelson, State Senator, living in Pendleton. I think the Senator Yee has covered the facts and figures. I'm coming from a perspective of a wheat grower and indicating the importance of foreign markets to our markets. 40% of the wheat in the United States comes down through the Columbia River. It comes from the Dakotas, Nebraska, Montana, Idaho. It's a huge amount of produce that's moved down to that river. It's a great effect upon the city of Portland. Thousands of jobs in the city of Portland are related to the traffic that comes down through the Columbia River. But that traffic has to go someplace, and China has a huge market, as been indicated. One of the things, the problems that the Oregon wheat growers have had is that we have a type of wheat that we grow in our state that has not been accepted in the Chinese market. We have a type of wheat we call soft white. The Chinese have always claimed there's been a smut problem, not a pornographic problem, but a smut problem. That's a disease of some sort. And so they have not accepted that wheat, but as Senator Yee indicated, this year there's been a breakthrough in those negotiations, and I have to give her credit for that, and also former Senator Mike Thorne, who's now the director of the Port of Portland. They were working on that way back in the 1980s, trying to get that, you might give the President of the United States credit, but I always give Senator Yee credit because I think she's worked on it for a long time. But anyhow, this is the type of wheat that we grow in Oregon. It's never been able to be sold in the Chinese market. And to open that market to us would be very important. Our wheat, most of our wheat is exported, but we're in competition with Australia, Canada, Europe, India. And so we need more markets. I think as we look at our economy and look at what we're trying to fund our public services, we're only as good as our economy. And so those things that we can do to improve our economy, to improve our economic base, to improve our public service possibilities, I think that's an essential. And in all these businesses where you're talking about the competition, it's really politics. And you have to have a contact. You have to have people you can go talk to. And I think having an office is extremely important. And in my knowledge of the wheat industry in Oregon, prior to the time the Oregon Wheat Commission or the Oregon Wheat League was formed, either one of them, there were no markets in the Far East. But those people have gone over there, and they take their cooks, they take their products, and they say, this is how you can use these things in your country. So they have actually created markets, and so I think that's the benefit and value of Senator Yee's proposal. So I urge your support.
Thank you. Representative Mesley, did you want to testify? Please come forward.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just wanted to say that smut denotes bad business either way, in soft white greed or otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Ken Mesley from District 48, which is the Southern Oregon Coast. I had the opportunity in the fall of 1997 to be in a delegation with Senator Yee and the leadership from the House and the Senate and a trip for 2 weeks in China. And I was absolutely amazed when I was preparing for that trip, the number of people from my district, which I would think would be kind of isolated, who actually are doing and trying to do business with China, all the way from Freeman Marine down in Gold Beach, who builds, fabricates equipment for fishing boats, to timber products from the Port of Coos Bay. The reason I went on I was asked by the Speaker of the House because of my experience in the Oregon Beef Commission and also my experience as a port commissioner in Copiel and Coos Bay area. I was amazed at the size of the market, at the opportunities that we have in that country, and the need for a coordinating office in Shanghai. We toured some of the facilities they have there and saw what some of the other states are doing, and it's a tremendous advantage to have a presence in the country that can help the companies that are trying to go through the process of getting into the markets and getting their products available. So I don't want to take a lot of your time. I know you've had a lot of testimony. I just want to support this bill, both bills.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions? If not, thank you. Now, we have 21 people signed up, and there's no way we can listen to all 21 because you have a choice. You can either talk the bill to death or you can get it passed. That's your choice. So I would urge you, whoever has a written testimony, to submit it. Otherwise, the longer you talk, the more you jeopardize the possibility of the bill. Katie Thorne, representing the governor's office, would you like to come forward, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I heard what the chair of the subcommittee had to say. However, I do feel compelled to take this opportunity to go through and present the governor's office concerns with this bill. And I do have a proposal for you to amend the bill, which I would hope that the committee would seriously consider. My name is Katie Koba, and I serve as staff in the governor's office. I'm here this morning to present the governor's concerns about Senate bills 1129 engrossed in Senate bill 1130. The bills would in essence direct the Department of Economic Development to open a trade office in Shanghai, China, no later than July 1, 2001. The question of opening the trade office in China has been discussed and studied quite extensively during this current biennium. Based on the findings of the International Trade Commission, the governor's own trade mission to China in March of 1998, and input from the business community, the governor does not believe the state should open a trade office in China at this time. During the 1997 legislative session, House Bill 5051 recognized that the Christmas tree bill appropriated $167,000 to the Department of Economic Development for negotiations and costs to open a trade office in Shanghai, China. This bill follows the passage of the department's budget bill, Senate Bill 5501, which included a lengthy budget note related to the China market and directed the department to report its findings to the emergency board, and I've attached a copy of that budget note. The passage of these two bills obviously sent mixed messages about the process to be undertaken regarding China. Governor Kitzhaber had initially indicated a potential line item veto of the $167,000 appropriation for a trade office in Shanghai, China. He ended up not exercising the line item veto, but included a letter explaining his intent regarding the funding, and I've also attached a copy of that letter. This letter makes clear the governor's thought process regarding a trade office in China. He believed it was very important to engage in a thoughtful and deliberative process regarding a decision about opening a trade office in China. A thoughtful and deliberative process has occurred related to the subject, and many players have been involved. The governor included 10 individuals from Oregon's business and education community on his trade mission to China a year ago. Part of the group's charge was to assess and make recommendations regarding a trade office in China. Attached, you will find a list of those individuals and their findings. I would like to highlight their point number 7, which states that, quote, it is premature for Oregon to open a representative office or offices on the Chinese mainland, but the state should be consistently and actively building a base of relationships and knowledge related to doing business in China, quote, unquote. The findings of the International Trade Commission, chaired by Bill Williams, CEO of Bear Creek Corporation in Southern Oregon, clearly identified deliberate steps that the state should take as it approaches the China market. The first step is to enhance the resources within OEDD's International Trade Division, where expertise is currently located regarding trade with China. The department has included a $200,000 request in its budget before this subcommittee to accomplish this goal. The second step would be to contract with an entity in China which could serve as a representative for Oregon's interests. The Economic Development Department has used this tool in the past to explore marketing opportunities in Europe and Mexico. The Department of Agriculture uses this tool in many international markets, and the Port of Portland uses this approach currently in China. If these investments indicate that the state of Oregon could benefit from opening a trade office in China, then the next step will be to move forward and open an office. I would like the subcommittee to consider amending Senate Bill 1129 and 1130 to allow the department to move forward and contract with a representative in China, but not direct the opening of a trade office at this time. A contract representative would work with the state and with Oregon businesses to further trade opportunities between Oregon and China. Based on the outcome of this investment, we could then identify the appropriate time, size, and location for opening a state trade office in China. I have additional concerns with these bills that I need to briefly address. The state of Oregon currently has three overseas trade offices. They are located in Japan, Taiwan, and Korea. None of these trade offices are established in statute, nor do we believe they should be created in statute. If this bill was to move forward, we would set the precedent of establishing a trade office in statute. All of the existing trade offices serve the state's international marketing efforts, including tourism marketing and agricultural marketing. The Port of Portland is also involved in two of the three trade offices. None of the other state entities, including agriculture, tourism, nor the Port of Portland, would be interested in a China trade office at this time. The appropriate location for a trade office presents another question. Agricultural products currently move into China primarily through Taiwan and Hong Kong. The Port of Portland's contract representative is located in Hong Kong. The current successful effort being undertaken by Oregon's seed industry and the Department of Agriculture requires extensive negotiation with China's federal officials, which are located in Beijing. And there is certainly an incredible trade opportunity in Shanghai, China's business center. This kind of a dynamic also presents a challenging question when you consider the potential structure of a trade office. How many staff? Should all those staff be co-located in the same facility? What kind of travel budget would be required? The diversity of the China market and the inherent challenges of this market will require more resources than those currently used to staff the Taiwan or Korea trade offices. There are some incredibly exciting opportunities for trade between Oregon and China. You will hear from the seed industry about their project, which started during the governor's visit to China last year. The state recently signed a memorandum of understanding with China, which establishes a U.S.-China Sustainable Development Center here in Oregon. There is no doubt that China will continue to grow as a major economic center in this world, and Oregon should be positioned to take advantage of that opportunity. The state partners, Oregon Economic Development Department, Oregon Department of Agriculture, the Tourism Division, and the Port of Portland, will continue to explore opportunities with China for the benefit of Oregon's businesses. We believe the next logical step is to contract with a representative in China and would request that you amend this bill to reflect that course of action. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Question, Representative Package.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, it appears from my reading of the bill that we can hire someone in China as you're proposing, and I'm just trying to delineate what you're saying, the difference between the trade office, is that some kind of term of art that I'm not aware of, and can you expand on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, as I mentioned, we do have three existing trade offices, and yes, they are an official location with a sign on the door that says State of Oregon Trade Office. They are recognized in those countries as a trade office. I think what we're saying right now is we'd like to start with a contract representative, which could be located in Hong Kong, Beijing, Shanghai, could move about, and really work with Oregon businesses in a more flexible manner to address their needs. And it may be that we would look at more than one individual to serve in that capacity if the need was there.
Yes. But I guess I don't see how the bills, how 1129 mandates how many people you have to have. It's just a Shanghai, mm-hmm. I realize that. But beyond that, I mean, I don't see the difference, I guess, between calling it a trade office or a trade representative, for lack of a better term of art, I guess. And can you just delineate for me what the difference between the two are? I mean, I know like a lot of the several law firms in Portland have, they're the consulate, I think, or they're the representative for various countries. And it's just through their law office. And I don't see, with a trade office, I don't see why the same type of relationship couldn't be brought along in a Chinese law firm. I traveled in China for 2.5 months fairly extensively, and I just don't see what the difference is, I guess, between what you're asking the governor to do and this. My understanding is they could do what you're exactly asking to do because they're not mandated to do anymore. The only difference is this is staying in Shanghai as opposed to opening it up.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patridge, let me refer you in Senate Bill 1129 to Section 1 and Section 2, and it's a language which I interpret one way and perhaps the committee interprets a different way. Section 1 reads, the Economic Development Department shall undertake negotiations and other activities necessary to open an Oregon trade office in Shanghai, China, not later than July 1 of 2001. Section 2 then reads, when the Oregon Trade Office in Shanghai is established, the Trade Office shall promote an increase in exports from Oregon to China and may, sub 1, contract with a qualified person to obtain the services of the person as a consultant or an agent for Oregon and China. I think what we would recommend is that you eliminate Section 1 and rewrite the beginning of Section 2 that basically directs the department to do what's listed in Section 2, sub 1.
I guess I would just ask what Senator Eden, I thought the intent was to be able to hire someone in, to be able to hire someone in China, to be able to carry out this function, and maybe we're having a language, a semantics problem about this, because I would read this that you could hire someone, that the OED could hire someone in China, they would just say this is the Oregon China trade office there, and go on just like you're recommending.
Yes, I really don't see any difference between our directing Economic Development Department to hire a consultant being prepared to increase trade opportunities, do research for businesses here, and set up an office by year 2001. This gives us time to do the network and get ready. The fact that it's in the statute shows a long-term commitment. I guess relationships, trade relationships, friendly relationships take a long time to establish. And put it in the statute shows Oregon's commitment to international trade and to work with China to establish trade relationships. I really don't see the difference between what the governor is proposing and my proposal, except mine is in the statute, so that it shows our commitment.
Mr. Chair, I guess I have a question to clarify whether Senator Yee views the trade office that's mentioned in Senate Bill 1129 as something similar to what we currently have in the three other countries that I mentioned.
Thank you. Are there other questions? Representative Butler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions relative to, and I appreciate the fact that there's a semantics, potential response like the semantics, it looks like could be fairly easily worked through. But I wonder what the response, there are 10 other states that have permanent trade offices in China. And notably, two of those states are Washington and California, who lead this country in exports to China. And we recognize that with all of our exports, 1.5% of them leave this country and go to China, and that we are 25th of all of the 50 states in our annual exports to China, in spite of the geographic advantage, whereas the other two states enjoying the same geographic advantage are number one and two. I'd like to have what your response would be, Ms. Kovac, to that issue in relationship to the established offices of California and Washington, why this wouldn't present right now a great opportunity for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Butler, the Department of Economic Development is here and just mentioned to me that the numbers of states that you mentioned that have trade offices, only three or four of those are actually permanent offices. The others are structured like what we're proposing as a contract representative kind of a setup. In terms of the state of Washington and California, they have some different dynamics than we do here in Oregon. The state of Washington has Boeing, and Boeing has an incredible amount of exports to China, which is something that we would need a completely different kind of economic base before we would even come close to the state of Washington. And I think the state of California compares to itself. It's a huge state with an incredible number of businesses, and it's just the size and the ability of those businesses to move product into that country. That's not to say that there aren't opportunities for Oregon and China, and I think the governor sees that, and we see that, and we're doing everything that we can to take advantage of those. I think we're trying to do it in a fashion that moves slow and seems to make sense to us anyway.
Follow up. In the first paragraph, the governor of the governor's of your presentation from the governor's office, it says the governor does not believe that the state should open a trade office in China at this time. The penultimate paragraph on page 3, the last sentence there, or the next to last sentence, indicates there's no doubt China will continue to grow major economic center of the world. Oregon should be positioned to take advantage of that opportunity. And it says that the state partners, Economic Development Department, Oregon Department of Agriculture, Tourism Division, and the Port of Portland will continue to explore the opportunities in China to benefit Oregon businesses. I go back to the first, if not at this time, then when? What's the triggering device?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, that's the question that we have before us. And I think it may be by the end of this biennium we feel the time is right to move forward to open an office, and we would come back to the next legislative session answering those questions that I posed in my testimony. Where should it be located? How many staff? What kind of budget? I think that's very plausible, but I think we have concerns about mandating that happen by July 1, 2001 without those questions answered. It may be that we're 3 years out. It may be that we're 4 years out. But I think we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I would hope that we would continue to work with those partners in Oregon that are interested in an office to help us determine that answer.
Thank you very much. Representative Schrader.
Hi, Mr. Chair. I have some basic questions. I don't know if Ms. Kova or OEDD is probably the better one to answer this, about how much is spent on the trade offices currently in Japan, Taiwan, and Korea, and also what's the relative amount of business or trade that we have with them and what we expect with China.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I can certainly give a brief overview, and then if you want more detail, the department has that. The trade office in Japan were roughly about $1 million. I think we're a little under $1 million now in terms of that office budget. The staff is roughly 4 FTE, and the Port of Portland co-locates in that office with us. The office in Taipei, I think we're at about 200,000. In that country, the Port of Portland does not share our office staff with us. In Seoul, Korea, it's about $150,000 budget, but the port shares half of that, so the total budget is roughly 300,000. In terms of the amount of trade with those countries, I think we all were very interested in the fact that in the last quarter, roughly, South Korea emerged as Oregon's number one trading partner. It'll be interesting to see how that turns out. Certainly there are interesting times in Asia that we're dealing with. Japan has traditionally been Oregon's number one trading partner. It has dropped, obviously, given their tough economic times, but I would expect that country to rebound. And then Taiwan, which is a gateway into China, is, I can't tell you, maybe in the top 10. China is not quite in the top 10, and the department can give you more specific information in terms of where China ranks.
Yes.
And basically, what the current bill with the amendments, it wants to spend as much money on the new China office as we do with our number one trading partner in the Far East.
You're comparing that to South Korea, yes, that would be correct.
Yes.
How did we set up what was the process by which we got to a trade office in each of these countries? Did we immediately go to the trade office, or did we go in some other fashion?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, I think you're going to have the Department of Economic Development answer that. I know that in Japan we've had an office there for a number of years, and I was not around when it was created.
Okay, thank you. Representative Patrick, did you have a question?
I'm just trying to clarify where we're at, what the language is. My understanding is, from your testimony today, that the governor's office doesn't oppose putting a, having a contract representative, trade office, whatever you want to call it, a contact person in China. Your only concern, in addition to this, is the location and mandating when it needs to be done. I mean, are those the three? I'm trying to get what the concerns are down, because in talking to Senator Yee outside this process, I mean, outside the hearing and at other times, my understanding was is it to hire someone in China to be the trade office there, where it was fine.
Right. Hire a, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Hire a consultant beginning January 1, 2000, for 18 months. Before the establishment of a trade office, get ready for the data, the network.
And that's what this bill reads to me, and I'm trying to get the, and I think we're trying to establish them, I'm trying to establish some legislative history so we're clear about what we're doing, and so, you know, the government's concerns are that it's in Shanghai, that we specify the location and the date when we're mandating that it be done.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Patridge, I think the governor's concern with this bill as it's written currently is that Section 1 mandates the department to open a trade office by July 1 of 2001. If you took that out of the bill, we would be fine with the bill.
Mr. Chairman, I think when we work, we like to establish a goal. The goal is to set up a trade office to facilitate businesses. As far as legislative history is concerned, Fujian province wanted to establish a trade office with Oregon, our sister state, and that was 4 years ago. They offered to take care of the rent of the office, and we would pay for the personnel. An agreement was a memorandum of understanding to promote trade between our sister state and Oregon was signed by economic development and by the party chairman of Fujian province. They're higher than governor in China, and Raisin means putting $50,000 for the hiring of personnel, and governor canceled that in 6 months later. And then last session, we had money appropriated for the trade office. Governor was on the verge of vetoing it, but the office was not moved ahead. So I don't understand the governor's hesitance in starting up office with China. We have a trade office in Tokyo at the amount of $1 million for a country about one-tenth of China's size. And we have an office in Taiwan at a cost of about $300,000 to $350,000 budget. Warren, is this correct?
Mr. Chair, that's
correct.
The trade is over $400 million.
$300,000 to $350,000 budget for a trade office in Taiwan for a population of less than 2% of China. I think it is. Time is right that we set up an office with a starting cost of $230,000. The money is within existing budget to hire a consultant and to prepare for setting up an office, set up contacts, see which areas we need to concentrate and move ahead. If we don't have a goal, how do you move ahead? But if we have a goal to have a long-term commitment for a trade relationship to help businesses here, we can move one step at a time. We all know China will be a tremendous trade partner for Oregon in the next century. We need to put the foot in the door and move ahead.
Okay, echoing that, we do need to move ahead, so thank you very much. Is there anybody that is life or death situation that you feel compelled to testify? Well, you're welcome to come up and testify, but we're trying to take some action on this bill. We're not trying to be discourteous. We have five other bills on the agenda today, and we can stay here the Labor Day and hear every bill and every person, so we can move ahead. If there's no one else, if you submit written testimony, we would be glad to accept it. Yes, sir. Please come forward and make those comments, and if we can keep them brief.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Warner Wildauer. I'm a member of the committee for over 3 years now. I'm also the chairman of the board of Leupold and Stevens, a company that's been in existence here in Oregon since 1909, and which is manufacturing precision optics and marketing those worldwide, competing with all the large optics companies. I'm also the U.S. chair of the International Optics Commission on Consumer Optics, so I'm exposed to international trade every day. I will not bother you at all with any of the statistics that we generated in our reports. You already have those on hand. For about 10 months, we worked diligently with the business community and other consultants to provide you with that information. And we feel that the proposal that Ms. Koba just made, we are supporting that wholeheartedly. We feel that it is necessary to start a program in looking at China with greater intensity. But we feel that should not be legislated, but it should be a careful study. We should move forward. We should hire an individual that would start to examine the real opportunities in China. You have received recently the Rubicon report or part of that. And there are statements in there that are extremely important, that the trade for small and mid-sized businesses in China needs to be carefully started. They are not for the lighthearted. These efforts are for people that have great trade experience. And I would like to share with you some of our own company's experiences with China.
Go ahead.
Okay.
We get interrupted here by things, so go ahead. I apologize.
We are doing business in China, but we are very careful in how much technology we expose within the Chinese market because of the blatant disregard for our patents. And that is one of the greatest concerns, and that companies that we urge to do business in China, we have to make them aware of many of these hurdles and the theft of intelligent property is a very real threat in doing business in China. And so I would like for our partner here to make some additional comments.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Klugner. I am a member of the Governor's International Trade Commission. I'm also an retired as president of Car International, but I'm still a director of Car International and Car Lumber Company. I am speaking representing the 89% of small to medium exporters here in the state of Oregon. They are not dollars, but they are people that are trying to do business all over the world. We currently do business in the Philippines, we do business in Japan, in Korea, and all the different islands in Europe. The only business that we have done in China, and that is not for a lack of trying, is through other companies that have been going through Taiwan,
to Hong Kong or to Korea, for which we have trade offices in Taiwan and Korea that can source those same things for people like ourselves. And we have built apartment houses in Harbin, China, and we have sent other products through there. But we can never do any direct business with any direct company in China. They do not have free enterprise like they do in Japan or Korea or any of those countries. So they're seriously here trying to help this 89% and not the other 11%. And I would urge you to accept what the Trade Commission has worked on for 3 years, what the OEDD has worked on, what Rubicon has said. China is a huge market. That's true. It's a huge market. But the accessibility in there is for, it is not good for small to medium exporters. I don't think that you're going to gain anything by opening a trade office there at this time. A representative, maybe, like they're talking about, would try to be helpful. We have one that's working for us currently in Mexico. And what they do is they research the market to see if they can help people like the small to medium exporters to do business in that country. The big ones are already there. Nike's got a factory there. Senator Yee was talking about Motorola and General Electric. Car Lumber is not a Motorola.
General Motors.
Yes. But, I mean, we're not big companies like that. We can't afford to go in and invest in China, put in a lumber yard there, and plan to sell in China that way. That's how companies are selling in China today. And I agree, it's a big country. The potential is great. But for a legislative mandate, I think it's not right to say you have to open a trade office in China. I mean, you could say the same thing to open one in Denmark, and you'd be up a creek without a paddle because there isn't any business there for us. So that's all I have to say. I'm just saying, I've been on two trade trips also to China, 1985 and 1998 with the governor. Met with many people there, and always it was the same answer. If you want to come to China, you want to invest in China, you want to export your technology, we're here to help you, okay? But for me to export directly to a company in China, no, it doesn't happen. So that's all I've got to say here.
All right. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, I'm a member of the China Council, and I've been away from the court for about 3 years.
I don't want to cut you off, but would you please consider submitting written testimony? We have five other bills to hear today. And this bill is in pretty good shape, and only by delaying it are we jeopardizing the future of this bill. And so I would ask you in the strongest terms possible, please submit written testimony.
Could he say a sentence? Could he say a sentence?
Senator Yee, we've been on this an hour, and we had 1.5 hour allotted to this bill. And so I must close the hearing on Senate Bill 1129 and 1130, and we'll open the work session on Senate Bill 1129. Are we wrapping?
Mr. Members of the Committee, the recommendation on Senate Bill 1129 is that you adopt the amendment that was forwarded to you this morning by Senator Yee, and I'm looking for my copy.
Those are the A2 amendments.
What those amendments do is that they establish in other funds, their lottery funds expenditure limitation in the Economic Development Department and on one full-time equivalent position for the establishment of a trade office in China by July 1, 2001, and also to pay the costs associated with a consultant for 18 months during the biennium, and for staff in the Portland International Trade Office, and for costs related to establishing that office. The funding for this bill will come from a combination of sources, $167,000 will be from the allocation in 1997-99 that was not expended for the China Trade Office, and $63,000 water expenses will come from the proposed allocation to the Economic Development Department.
You've heard the recommendation. Is there a question?
I have a question.
Representative Butler.
Mr. Chair, relative to the issues that were brought to us by the governor's office, that we've been mandated under the statute to go ahead and open a trade office in Oregon, or for Oregon, in Shanghai, and then Shanghai and the date, is that, I'd like to have Senator Yi respond to the three concerns: the date, specific location, and the mandate. How strongly she feels about the deletion of Section 1, as Ms. Kobe indicated that would be the only objection that the governor has.
Senator Yi, do you want to respond to that question?
Yes. In my material here, I have 11:30, but I don't have 11:29. Mr. Chairman, yes. One of the dates, this gives us years to get ready for setting up the trade office. And this means Oregon is committed to setting up an office and do business with China. We're not going to come here today and leave tomorrow. There may be political situations up and down, but we are committed to explore trade opportunities and increase markets for Oregon products and services. That's why we have a date, a goal to do business officially. In China, I guess with all countries, we value trust and friendship. This is not a short-term business. We are here to stay, and we are going to cooperate and do work together and increase trade together. That's why there's a date and a place. The place being Shanghai, China, is Shanghai is destined as the largest finance and trade center in Far East. That's in the leadership goals. The premier, the president, they're all from Shanghai, and they have destined Shanghai to be the largest finance center. And if our office is set up there, it has all the opportunity, contacts right there. That's access to our office, and that will be accessible to our business in Oregon. The reason it is a mandate is the same as my beginning explanation, that this is a goal that we're going to reach, and we realize that there's tremendous trade potential. They are going to be our largest trade partner. We want to be there and increase Oregon's presence and visibility.
Senator Yi, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I think we've discussed this, and I'd like to move on as quickly as we can.
I'm trying to explain.
I know, but we have four other bills. People have traveled over 200 miles to be here, and we want them to be able to
stay. You want a motion, Mr. Chairman?
The LFO, are you finished with your recommendation?
Yes, sir.
I would accept a motion to Senate Bill 1129.
Yes. Mr. Chairman, I move that we amend Senate Bill 8 and growth, Senate Bill 1129, with the amendment of -A2, which will...
Senator Yi moves that we amend Senate Bill 1129 with the -A2 amendment and the LFO recommendation on the use of the levy. Is there further discussion? Is there questions? Is there objection?
I'm going to be giving a courtesy vote to Senator Yi.
All right. This is just on the amendment. Okay. Is there objections to the amendment other than anybody here? Okay. If there's not, then it's all approved. Now, Senator Yee.
I move that we adopt Senate Bill 1129A and Gross as amended and send it to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Senator Yee now moves that Senate Bill 1129 as amended be sent to the full Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Senator Lim.
And, it's a mandating Shanghai. What happened is that sometimes the political situation might change, and my concern is the sort of mandating in Shanghai. It's a trade-off in China, so it could be a Beijing, it could be a Shanghai. You know, give some flexibility. That's my thought. I support the office, but mandating where and what time seems like a tie-up much ahead.
Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
See, the consultant will start work in January year 2000. So by 2001, we will have a year's track record. And at that time, if Senderman believes that we should look at the track record and make some changes in case there's some facts we find out that will bring us to change, we can look at it
again. We can talk about it. All right, the clerk will call the roll.
Kim.
Aye.
Yee.
Aye.
Lin.
Aye.
Duke.
Aye.
Beck.
Reluctantly, aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Butler.
Aye.
Cassius.
Aye.
Lewis.
Aye.
I give a courtesy vote, but I will reevaluate it once it arrives in the floor of the Senate. Motion carries.
Thank you. Work session on
Senate Bill 1130. Oh, no work session? Okay. This is the work session of Senate Bill 1130 and open the hearing.
I do need hearings on
1130. Senator Yee can turn to the full Ways and Means Committee, and Senator Yee can turn on the floor of the Senate, and Representative Patrick would like to be carried in the House.
Thank you very much.
Open the public hearing on House Bill 2153. And we have several people here from the House folks who would like to testify. Is Representative Messerly here? Senator Tarno? Is Representative Lehman here too? Welcome to the committee. Welcome to the committee. Please go ahead and start.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Ken Messerly, State Representative from District 48, which is Southern Coos and Curry County. Actually, my district goes right around Coos Bay, except part of the port in the western portion. I'm here today to basically answer any questions you might have with in regards to this bill. I would like to lay out some of the issues that we've been confronted with. The area's been depressed for several years and been on a decline in the Coos County area. We have a underemployed population, drastically underemployed. We have an underutilized port to the point that times past used to have a one ship per day average visit to the port. Last December, I believe it hit the low of three ships for the entire month of December. The working families in the area make an average of around $20,000 as opposed to the metro area of about $50,000 per year. Actually, our average families of all families in the area average about 30, but the employment personnel tell me that if you take out the retired people, that the working families make about $20,000. We're also, our unemployment rate dropped this last month to 8.2, I believe, from up double digits. But that's not an indication of more employment, that's an indication of the workforce moving out. This is further exemplified by the fact of our dropping school enrollment and also the moving companies, the U-Hauls and things. All of their work is the customers and their rentals are going out of the area, and they have a real problem of getting equipment back into the area. I want to talk briefly about what we're after here, what we're talking about here today. What we need is a commitment so that the county can go out for a bond election with the local people. The project in total breaks down to $20 million we're asking from the state through these lottery bonds today. The county is preparing themselves to go out for a bond issue paid for by the taxpayers in Coos County. And Northwest Natural Gas is committed to a $10 million plus putting in the grid for the area. This project will cover the communities in the county of Coos Bay North Bend area, Myrtle Point, Coquille, and Bandon. So it's going to cover basically the whole county in population centers. We need a commitment. We're not looking for a lot of cash flow, if any, this coming biennium. But what we need is the commitment from the state so that when we go to the bond election, we can state that to the voters of the area. The cash flow projections we've seen so far would be something less than $10 million, and that would come at the very end, probably in May, at the end of this coming biennium. So we're not looking at selling the bonds early in the biennium. And as we get on through the project and get more engineering done, we'll be able to refine that figure. But possibly May or so, April or May at the earliest, we would need the cash flow. We need to sell those bonds, and then the dollars would come as the project proceeds. There's a lot of people here today who have much better technical knowledge than I do. I understand you have some amendments coming in today. I want to restate that what is important to us is that we have that commitment so that we can go to the bond election.
Thank you. Senator, welcome to the committee.
Senator, thank you very much. I'm Senator Will Farno from District 24 of the South Coast, and I'm here primarily to critique Representative Messerly's presentation, and I think he did very well. In all seriousness, it is an economic issue for us at home. One of the last regions in the state to have natural gas. We've had a lot of interest already expressed in the use of that as a commercial venture. One of the large timber companies is very interested in putting in a kiln drive operation, and natural gas would be a big benefit for that. But the hurdles we have to go through is just primarily up to you folks to get us started down this path. And I just ask for your help as well. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Senator Duke, do you have a question?
Well, I may have found the answer. I'm not sure. I was looking through, and the bill is pretty general. I didn't see any guarantee that...
There's going to be some amendments.
Is that the dash?
Well, there are three sets of amendments in the Department of Economic Development and World Direction.
Okay, so then we're going to... projects?
Yeah, they haven't really seen any of these amendments. I know there's some coming forward.
You're in here somewhere.
All right. Thank you both for being here. And we'll try to put this on the fast track. Alan Rumbaugh, Nikki Whitty, if you can keep it brief, short, and then support.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. That was just long enough.
Is that long enough? Thank you. I'm in support. Is that good enough? I will quickly summarize my testimony. The port certainly has been supportive of House Bill 2153 that would in part bring natural gas to our area. We've lost 70% of our manufacturing jobs over the last 20 years, so I don't need, I guess, to give you the litany of that. May I say that... this will help the Port of Coos Bay, Oregon's second largest port, continue to maintain its competitive position. But I will also say that we also support the deepening of the Lower Columbia River. We believe that's extremely important for this committee also, to keep that trade center flowing. So we're hoping that those projects make sense together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Nikki Whitty, the Coos County Commissioner. I know that
did the goal of this committee to have a large return on the investment of your lottery dollars and that you want to see jobs created. In a study that was completed by a firm named Eco Northwest, a contribution of $20 million in lottery dollars today will bring back $95.6 million in personal income tax to the state of Oregon and $2.4 million in corporate income tax revenue. Being able to complete this line and the associated business development that's expected should create over 20 years, 2,715 jobs. And Coos County has been trying to put this project together for over 10 years, trying to use private sources, and the revenue just isn't there, and that's why we're before you today asking for your help. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions? Yeah, thank you both very much. Lee Golder, Tim Bishop, and Greg Fletcher, if I should ask all three of you to come up. Just bring another chair up so you can take all three. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning.
Senator, my name is Doug Fletcher, and to you, I want to extend my appreciation for the opportunity of appearing before you and other members of the committee. This is the first time for me appearing in this position, so I would hope that you would bear with me as I present to you a prepared statement that I did last night.
Okay.
In March of this year, I was elected as president of an organization with my colleague Tim Bishop here, who is the president. I was elected vice president. We co-chair an organization called FONSI. Usually when folks hear this name, there's either an amused or questionable look about the name. FONSI is the acronym for Friends of New and Sustainable Industry. We're a grassroots organization that presently rosters over 550 members. By design, we do not have a membership fee, but we stand as an organization dedicated to the economic welfare and well-being of our area. Early last year, we became the lead advocate in a bond measure that had to do with the port and the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay. They're partnershiping with North Bend and the continued service of commercial air service. We mounted a campaign, took the issue to the voters, and were successful in that issue and have ensured continued commercial air service to the area. Our purpose of being here today is to encourage you folks to help us as we deal with the economic situation in the southern part of the state. Our primary focus has been on natural gas as a lacking part of the infrastructure, and we, as a solution-oriented organization, are prepared to mount a campaign and take this issue to the voters. Clearly, the citizens of Coos County associate natural gas and job opportunities. They're prepared to step up to the plate, be a part of their own destiny, but they need some help. To say that we're excited and encouraged by the prospect of the state helping us would be an understatement. This partnership not only provides economic stability for us, but also provides a generous recovery of revenue for the state of Oregon. We respectfully urge your approval and favorable consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Question. Can I ask both you gentlemen that remain, are you both from Coos County?
Yes.
Would you just indicate your name, where you're from, and allow one spokesman, because we really need to move on. I'm not trying to, I know this is your first time, and we don't act like this all the time, but it's towards the end of the session, and we have to move because we have five bills at this point, and it does not diminish your testimony or your position at all.
It's just that we have to move, and somebody has to be the bad guy and I'm the bad guy. Okay?
Yeah.
But if you could both identify yourself.
Yes, my name's Tim Bishop, and I'm a citizen of Coos County.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I, too, is the first time sitting in this position to testify in front of you. I thank you for the opportunity this morning to talk to you. I am the mayor of the city of North Bend, president of Golder Company, Inc., operating Golders and Napa Auto and Truck Parts, established in 1921. Records show that we are the oldest Napa store in the nation, continue operating by the same family. As you can see, due to the many years in business, our company has seen economic boom and economic depression. The worst was the depression of the 30s when the city of North Bend issued wooden money and backed by the good faith of this city. The founder of Golders was involved in economic return to prosperity in Coos County, but we have now turned from economic prosperity to economic recession. The last 20 years, Coos County has lost approximately 4,000 highly paid manufacturing jobs. We are now in the prospect of exporting our best natural resource, our high school graduates. Due to the lack of economic growth, the graduates have one choice: pursue a livelihood away from Coos County. Even with the economic problems, the citizens are passing bond issues. I want to emphasize that they are passing substantial bond issues. An example, recently they passed a serial levy to save commercial air service to our area. School levies to repair buildings. The citizens of the area have known for many years gas was needed. At the turn of the century, there was a coking plant in North Bend to make gas and was piped throughout the city. Too bad that the system died approximately 85 years ago. We are here today to ask you for help to fund our much-needed natural gas pipeline. Natural gas is the economic fuel that levels the playing field so Coos County will have economic growth. I assure you, an investment in Coos County will have a manifold return for the state of Oregon. Thank you for letting me be in front of you here today.
Further questions? If not, thank you. Yes, sir.
I guess I need to follow up with your advice and identify myself. I'm Doug Fletcher.
Okay. Thank you very much, all three of you, for coming up today. Is there further testimony on House Bill 2153? Chief, what do you need? Do you need money set aside, or do you not want it now?
Mr. Chairman, I, based on the committee's request, did bring the Corps of Engineers with me to be able to answer any questions.
Okay.
We can be very brief.
Not quickly, Senator Dukes, I believe, had some questions on the Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, I don't know, we're talking quickly, but... yeah.
Here's the court. Well, there seems to be an issue surrounding the environmental impact statement. And as I told Keith yesterday, I'd like to give the Corps of Engineers a swift kick in the butt, because every project you've ever been involved in, you somehow screwed it up. We have a dam that is half built. It was built by a Japanese contractor. And the Japanese contractor was paid for the whole thing as if the dam had been built to its completion. Now, he laughed all the way back to Tokyo and said, I met a bunch of the dumbest Americans you can't believe. It was a Corps of Engineers. And I don't want you to screw up the Columbia River like you're screwing up other projects. If you don't like it, then replace yourself with somebody that will work for the system rather than trying to throw roadblocks. That's what happened with the Corps of Engineer Portland District Office on that, and I don't want to see it replicated again on the Columbia River. So now that I've given them a swift kick in the rear, that's how I feel. Senator Duke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The indications we're getting from the Corps of Engineers is that they are not going to redo the draft environmental impact statement. They're going to take the basically the ones that yelled the loudest and try to fix those and leave the rest of the impact statement intact, because it would take a lot of time and money to redo that entire impact statement. But the reality is that there are a very large number of pieces of testimony that were given on that from people who took a lot of time, especially, I mean, I don't mean to diminish anybody upriver, but I know personally what all went on in terms of town hall meetings and time and money invested from the mouth of the Columbia River. And my frustration is it appears that, say, the crab fishermen sued and won, so we're going to fix them. And somebody else has an outstanding to be really loud, so we're going to fix them. But there are a lot of communities on both sides of the river at the mouth who have complained about some very specific things. And I have a great concern that we not end up with a draft environmental impact statement where we fixed enough of the pieces to get enough votes to get this thing done. So I guess I wasn't much gentler than you, and the turns are a whole other issue. If what we're doing on turns is any indication of what we're going to get out of the environmental impact statement, then I have a great concern.
Would you like to make any comments?
Yes, I would. The process that we are mandated to go through is to put out a draft report, as you know. We had a 5-volume assessment of both.
Could I get you to identify yourself?
I'm Laura Hicks, the project manager for the Columbia River Channel Improvement Study. With that impact statement and feasibility report, it went out for public review. It was initially slated, as you probably well know, for a 60-day public review. That was then extended to over 100 days for public comment. We received about 183 comments on the report, and we are going through each and every one of those comments and responding. Some of the issues are large enough that required several public and workshop meetings, the offshore disposal site being one of them. We've worked through a lot of those different issues. We've been working with CREST, and we've been working with some of the region as it relates to issues on the Willamette River. I don't know exactly where you got the information that the Corps was not changing the EIS. We are revising many, many parts of it based on comments that we have received. And when the final comes out, we'll be asking people to look at how their comments were responded to and if they still have additional comments based on the revisions. One specific to the lower estuary is the Corps and the resource agencies had put in about a $4 million project for ecosystem restoration by building pile dikes and creating shallow water habitat. Given the concerns with the Caspian Churn, we have removed that from the project after a CREST Council meeting, and it won't be part of it. And so there have been some pretty substantial changes, in my opinion, to what was in the draft report and what you'll see in the final report.
Are you going to take a serious look at alternatives for the dredging of the Columbia River, which was the biggest impact that was made on the draft?
We are taking a very serious look at all the alternatives. Is your question specific to regional ports in Astoria? Okay.
Well, I believe that there. I'm not proposing any alternatives. I don't know that there are any that are better than dredging. But your obligation is to look at the alternatives, and the draft did not significantly do that. And that was one of the biggest attacks that was made, at least from my end of the state, on the draft. And so I'm curious. And what we're literally are being told from inside the Corps is that some of the issues are going to be addressed, but in terms of redoing the draft environmental impact statement and rewriting it and things, that won't be done. There will be, as you said, pieces will be done. And there was an incredible amount of stuff that was submitted that was, I mean, not fluff, not, said right on the surface kind of stuff. That, see, I expected initially that the draft would be completely revised, and I'm being told that that's not likely to happen because of the time and the cost. And as I said, one of the big issues down my way was that there was no serious look at the alternative, which is a requirement. So I was curious as to what kind of an effort the Corps was going to put into seriously considering the alternative situation.
Okay. Can I address that comment,
yeah,
sir? The Corps has been looking at the feasibility study for over 5 years. I think we have made a very serious attempt at all the alternatives that we've looked at. we were limited by the United States Congress to look at no alternatives deeper than 43 feet. And prior to the feasibility report, we did a reconnaissance report. So we have been studying and looking at improvements to the Columbia River since 1990. We will take the comments that we received, and now bear with me here, in that we have 5 years' worth of data. We have $6 million worth of investment into this from both cost-shared and federal government investment. What you will see is revisions to what we already have in place. We're not going to take all of that information and all of that research and just say it doesn't exist and start over. We will be addressing the comments that we receive. Many portions of that will require revision to the report. NEPA does not require rewriting and starting over with the entire environmental impact statement. Okay, and so you'll see major revisions, and we have said that we'll go back to Astoria. We'll have another public meeting prior to the release of the final report. We'll take comments from the area, and we'll try to address what it will be that they'll be seeing in the final report so that it doesn't come as a major surprise to them.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If there is no other further discussion, we're going to close the hearing on House Bill 2153. And the bill will be brought back up for a work session next Monday. One of the co-chairs just indicated that there's a slight constitutional problem with the bill and having the necessary votes to pass it at this time. And so that will be an issue of discussion between now and then. So,
And I know we're not going to go to work session. It's just that something in the dashboard caught my eye. And when I asked A11, and when I asked the housing director about it, I just need a simple answer as to whether or not that is a particular project or whether it's a mistake. It's on page one, lines 6 and 7.
Well, reopen the public hearing on the House Bill 2153. If we find, would you like to answer yes or no?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I am Bob Refine, Director of Housing Cleaning Services. There is not a project in mind. I think it actually might be a Scribner's error. I would offer the Senator a revision that would delete the words on-site, on-filled land, and just have the sentence read, provide affordable housing and other facilities.
We'll do with that in work session.
I'm not sure I didn't like it better the way it was written, because there aren't a lot of cities with a lot of sold land.
The client candidate.
Well, and Astoria is not sold land. So I think maybe I should just be quiet here and leave it alone. But
we'll deal with it in work session. Close the hearing on Health Bill 2153 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 483. Mark Jimmy. The chair moves that Senate Bill 483 that was sent out of this committee with a due pass recommendation be brought back to consideration before this committee. Is there objection? Not, it's been so approved. Senate Bill 483 regarding the smart jitney as before this committee. Senator Cheetah, would you like to make any comments?
Just basically that what we did was in the original bill, or we had amended the bill for lottery funds. That is where the funding is supposed to be, general fund, and so we have amended the bill for that reason. And I don't know if Dallas wants to speak any more to it, but that's essentially what it is. It's coming out of general fund rather than lottery fund.
Okay. Dallas, you want to make some comments?
Just briefly, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The Dash 2 amendment that you have, Senate Bill 43, incorporates the substantive matters that were in the Dash 1 amendment and simply changes the funding from lottery funds to general funds.
Maybe I don't have that amendment.
I don't have it.
dash two?
The dash two is right underneath the copy of the bill.
Okay. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 483 and open the work session on Senate Bill 483.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 483.
Senator Cucup now moves that the committee adopt the amendment to Senate Bill 483, the dash two amendment that replaces the $2 million of lottery funds with $2 million out of the general fund. Is there a discussion?
Question for
78.
I guess, actually, I will tell you what the secret is. The secret is that you have a committee, one session, and you do all kinds of work in your committee. And you reduce things, and you do all kinds of work. And then you read the paper after after the session was closed, and you find out that a Christmas tree bill has just undone every single thing that you did in your committee. So then you go tell the co-chairs that you really would like to have some help. And you get it. So I guess what you have to do is go through some pain of doing a lot of work and then getting it all undone in one fell swoop, and then continue your other work. But this is a good project. That's how.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be in good shape.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I believe 43 is a
matter of the Senator Butler, or Representative Butler, now moves Senate Bill 483 as amended.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Beck.
I have a question about Section 6 of the bill.
Okay, who would you like to pose that to?
Well, I thought I'd talk to Senator Cucup, I think. Maybe the proponent on Section 6, Sub 2, ORF 279.05-111 are not applicable. I was just curious as to what that was, and that gets into the competitive bidding process. I was just wondering why competitive bidding would have been explicitly excluded in this legislation.
Are you referring to the bill?
To the bill.
No.
Oh, you're on the amendment bill?
The amendment.
Don't delete that.
I didn't realize that it did eliminate the competitive bidding.
Well, and I'm not an expert on that part of the law, but I looked up the statutes that were exempt, and it's the policy of competition and public contract, methods of fostering competition, exemption from public improvement contracts. I just was curious as to whether that was the purpose to not bid this service out to multiple providers or
sure.
Representative Butler.
Didn't we have testimony in the meeting in our original hearing that there's no one else in Oregon that actually provides this, and that would take some period of time, and there is a patent involved here as well.
That was the testimony that was presented. I'm not sure if the representative yeah. was present when we had a hearing on the bill, but the person who's been working with Senator Cucup on this said that by going through the competitive bidding schedule, it still doesn't prevent anybody from coming in here from outside the state that meets the criteria. And so it really doesn't do anything with repealing the competitive bidding schedule other than the fact that it doesn't delineate between this and the company coming in from outside the state to compete. I mean, they can qualify as to meet this criteria.
Right.
And it's not designed to benefit one person over all the other competition.
And, Mr. Chair, if I could, something that Dallas just pointed out to me, too, is that that what it does, by doing this, it encourages partnerships, private partnerships, to be involved. So, we had stated in the hearing on the bill that we expect private entities and high-tech
companies and so forth to be involved in this in a way that they might actually, well, not donate, but at a much lower amount, partner with the state. That's the whole idea, is really to have a public-private partnership. But
It was discussed at quite some length in our hearing on the bill.
And I wanted to make sure that when we originally had the hearing on the bill, and I don't know if you were here, but I just wanted to declare there's no, I have no interest in this whatsoever. It just happens
the person in my district
has the patents on this, and he's willing to give the state of Oregon half of all the royalties if other states and communities participate with the software. And so
Oregon stands to agreement on that, do we?
Well, he doesn't have a contract yet.
Okay. Representative Frager,
this will go to the House Committee, is that correct, after coming out of here?
The Joint Committee, so normally.
It would depend on the Speaker of the House for the go vote.
The only reason I raised this, just to clarify, I really like this bill, co-sponsor bill, basically, but I just want to make sure that the understanding that it does prohibit, you know, competitive bidding is accurate. Also, I think maybe if there was a problem, we could always address it.
I think you addressed that in the hearing, but again, I want to get back to your question. I would strongly urge you to visit with the Speaker, because once the bill passes the Senate, then it'll be over in the House, and
there's not a lot of opposition because of this
technical. Right. I don't want that to be a problem either. Okay.
Okay. Further questions?
It's very broad, and I guess I hadn't paid that much attention to the language before in terms of it. I understand some of the pieces, personal services and stuff, but it's got the lease or sale of, purchase, lease or sale of goods, equipment, that sort of thing as well, and what I now understand to be the removal of the competitive bidding thing, so that the handheld pieces, folks wouldn't have to be put out to public bill. Or maybe that's part of that grand design that's out here to report them. But I think somebody might want to take a look at whether or not it truly needs to be quite so broad.
Okay. Senator Yee.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say this bill came from Transportation Committee, so it did come from a substance committee.
Further questions, send it in.
Whether it's coming from a specific committee or not, I appreciate that that's an issue. I want to make sure that there is a public vetting process that should be enforced. That's the whole question. If we close that, I think we've got a problem.
Okay. Is there further discussion? If not, Chair would entertain the motion. And I think we adopted that motion.
I'll move Senate Bill 483 as amended to the committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cusab now moves Senate Bill 483 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Aye.
Okay. Reluctantly, no.
Schrader.
Aye.
Butler.
Aye.
Kathy.
Why not?
Star. Aye. Aye. The motion carried, and the Senate Speaker carried the full
vote. This is the Senate to carry to the House.
Okay. All right, if there's nothing else before us, then we will stand in adjournment until tomorrow morning after the full Ways and Means Committee.
What are we doing tomorrow?
Equal Income Development. So we're adjourned.